Next Level Learning Podcast, part of the Keystone Area Education Agency. Welcome back to the Next Level Learning Podcast, the podcast where we are focused on trying to get from lower levels to upper level thinking. My name is Jared Borman. I am with
Norma Teasy.
And we have spent the last five episodes, and this is technically episode six. So we thought it'd be kind of fun to kind of do like a little bit of a summary. We've had five episodes where we've done interviews with five different educators who utilize different strategies to get students into the upper levels of thinking. And we thought it'd be kind of fun where maybe there's something we can learn from all these. Now, I know there are only five, which seems like a small pool of educators to sort of summarize from. But I think it'd be interesting to sort of pull together some some major themes that have come about from all five educators and see if there's some kind of conclusion maybe that we can draw from this a little bit. Yes, we'll be doing more episodes down the road and so forth, but these might be themes that we continue to see even maybe down the road next year and so forth. But we have our summary here where we've kind of honed in on four particular themes. And the first one that we kind of identified was the idea of taking risks. The second one is students expressing their learning or taking ownership of their learning. We also have this major theme of questioning or asking questions, and we are going to top it all off with a theme that we think is throughout all the episodes so far, and that's the idea of making connections. But we're going to kind of tackle each one of these, I would probably say, one at a time, so that way it's a little easier to follow along, if you will. And the idea of taking risks kind of brings itself to the forefront right away for me. And I think that's something that we hear all the time for anybody that is well-connected on any kind of professional learning network is trying to promote the idea of it's okay to fail forward. Is there anyone that kind of jumped out right away, Norma, that you can think of that really expressed this idea of taking risks and how important it was to get kids into the upper levels of thinking?
Well, you know, one of our first interviewees was Mike from Dubuque Senior, and he talked about using technology. And I think it was new in his district. He started out with Moodle, and I think now the district's gone to Canvas. But actually putting his some of his lessons online and allowing students to connect with him all the time, not just in that 45 minutes that they were in the classroom. And that was really taking a risk, because I think he's probably one of the first teachers in the Dubuque School District to try an online kind of a blended course, I guess you'd say.
Yeah.
And so that was taking a great risk because he had to learn the technology and a whole new teaching strategy.
Well, and so it was taking a risk for him specifically. And the thing that I remember is he was doing this like 10, 11 mm-hmm. years ago. So this is just right on the cusp of when this idea of blended and flipped learning was coming out. And for him to be able to take that risk as an educator and give it a try and give it a whirl. And he's even had to go through some of the bumps to switching between learning management systems. But that idea of taking risks for him as an educator has led to his students taking risks also within their classroom when it comes to posing new ideas, coming to their own conclusions and being able to defend those conclusions. I remember that being a very specific thing where he really wanted students to defend their answer and be able to push back on each other in a conversational environment. Also, another educator that popped to my mind as far as taking risks was Kelly Olson, the instructional coach at Al McKee. She has had several different positions in her time span of education, and one in particular was when when she self-admittedly said that social studies was a class that she had to teach, though she didn't feel like she was the expert in it. But taking that risk of teaching a content area that you may not be the most comfortable with has probably put her back in a position of being a learner all over again versus just the content mm-hmm. expert. And her ability to take that risk as an educator eventually also led to her students taking risks in her classroom as well, especially when she started to teach more in the area of science. I know that we had Jason in here, remember that, where yep. Jason mm-hmm. was talking about the FOSS kits and how the idea of taking those risks is able to then prompt more opportunities for learning. And so I guess that was one that kind of stuck out mm-hmm. to me in making that connection with another educator.
Yeah, and I think she talked about putting students in the driver's seat, too.
Yes.
And having students even take risks and tie it all to what's important in their life, which in a way, you know, is a real... It's throwing out the textbook and thinking differently how you're going to design the lessons.
Absolutely. And now that she's an instructional coach,
yeah,
she's got to promote that with right. teachers that she sure. works with. Yeah.
Another interviewee we had was Ann Gritzner, and I thought she really took some big risks too. Even though she said that she learned a lot of those strategies when she was at the university as a student, it was a big jump to really be that, we talked about, guide on the side.
Mm-hmm.
She let the students come up with community issues that were important to them.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't, you know, teach out of a textbook. And so then just to open that up and let students take control of what was going to be, what problems they were going to solve, what issues they were going to do, that's really taking a risk.
Well, when a community member comes to you and says,
yeah.
Is there a way we can reduce our lunch waste?
Yeah.
Can we look at this idea of composting? That is taking an instructional risk, because it's very comfortable to basically say, here's our textbook. Our textbook is our guide, and we're going to work through the textbook, versus looking outside that textbook for a real-world problem to solve. There could have been a number of different things that could have gone wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea of being okay with seeing those roadblocks as opportunities to then figure out how to problem solve, I think, is mm-hmm. looking at a situation differently.
And then if the problem wasn't solved or the solution didn't work, I remember her talking about how she told the kids, well, you don't just try again, but you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And why didn't it work? And then you try again. So it takes a longer time to get through your standards and get through all your coursework when you're doing that kind of a process. But in the end, it's worth it.
I think she's one in particular where I would love to just sort of sit down and say, okay, this composting project in general, how many standards did you really hit?
Mm-hmm.
When the students went through this process of reducing the waste by an incredible amount, I mean, it was like down to like 5% or something, mm-hmm. like a really single digit percentage of waste. How many Iowa science standards, but I'd be willing to bet that there are even other standards outside the science realm that she hit as well.
I'm guessing a lot of language arts.
Oh, totally, especially with the writing yeah. process yeah. that she talked about and speaking to
mm-hmm.
all those outside experts. You're talking about the language part of it. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see a
yeah.
little bit.
Yeah.
And then also mm-hmm. taking risks. You got another one there?
Well, Ann Johnson at Sageville. I thought that was really, really good example, because she's a second grade teacher, and she is a leader in the district. I believe it's called Cognitively Guided Instruction.
Yeah.
Where she asks a lot of questions too, but she lets students take charge of their own learning too by working in individually in small groups and big groups and going to get the tools that they need to learn. So it wasn't like she had a lockstep approach to teaching math, but she let those kids figure out on their own.
Yeah, and when a student...
With help, but...
Yeah,
you know,
when a student says, you know, what is this? When a teacher just basically says, I don't know, give it a try.
Yeah.
Just that simple, let's find
yeah.
out. Let's explore together. I just think that's a... It just seems like those are the key moments and opportunities where they seem to present themselves as something where we can go from lower level understanding to higher level almost instantaneously.
Yep, and that's in second grade. So starting from second grade, and then we've gone all the way up through senior high.
That still blows my mind.
Yep.
That still absolutely blows my mind that it's a second grade classroom, because when you listen to her describe her classroom, you would think that she's describing a high school
mm-hmm.
or even an AP level course in high school, right?
Right.
But we're talking about second graders. Yeah. It's really cool.
We never did get down there to visit her classroom, but I'd sure like to.
Oh, my gosh. That'd be a great one
yeah.
to sort of just be a fly in the
I
wall
know.
And observe. So the other idea theme that we kind of come about a little bit more is the idea of students taking ownership of their learning or being able to express their learning.
And we could jump right back to Ann Johnson and get in that second grade classroom. I kind of started alluding to that a little bit ago, but that's where the students learned the tools, but they also learned when and how to use those tools. So when a math problem or a story problem came up, they could think, this is what I need. I might need those manipulatives or those blocks to solve my problem, and they weren't afraid to go get those blocks and put them at their desk and use those to figure out. And so that's really, to me, taking ownership of their own learning and really thinking, oh, what do I need now? What do I need to help solve that problem?
Yeah, and I think she was also one that jumps to my mind in this category too, because it was a matter of, it sounded like she never let students just simply say, I don't know. She, as you referenced, those tools, go find something that helps you express to me, what do you know?
Yep.
So that way we can figure out where you're getting stuck. And I think that's just very powerful for a student to be able to do, to express their ideas, because we know that through more and more research, the metacognitive process of students, when they're able to sort of reflect, even the idea of building in reflection, I think is, wouldn't you say, is if an opportunity to express my learning?
Sure is.
Journaling, I know that Jason, particular, when we had him for the episode with Kelly Olson, he talked a little bit about the idea of journaling and using science journals and incorporating that aspect of writing. And I was actually helping a teacher just this morning before we started recording for the podcast, where she was wanting to incorporate journaling. And I asked her, what was the purpose of the journal? And she said, well, I want to incorporate more writing into my classroom. And I said, well, what kind of prompts are you giving them? And the prompts felt very surface level. Okay, so almost like lower level, kind of just tell me what this answer is, or tell me this connection, versus tell me what you're learning so far. Tell me about your process, versus what's your final thought. Tell me about the process of getting to that final thought.
Sure, then that brings in that reflection, but even problem solving, because in your own mind you have to think, well, what did I learn, and how could I do things differently, and where do I need to go in my learning?
And that leads me back to Ann Gritzner's classroom at the high school science level at Central, where when we come to, first of all, students taking ownership, that was a cornerstone of what her classroom is like, where they are taking the ownership through their project-based learning experience. But students expressing their learning, one component that I know Ann builds in that she kind of talked about was the community component, where she is asking students to express their answer to those big questions in a public forum in some fashion. And I know that's kind of a component of project-based learning, but that seems to be a pretty big part of it in getting students to say, look, here was the big question we started with, but here's my answer that I came up with through the whole process of it, and here's how I came to that answer.
Sure, that builds a lot of confidence in those students, too, that, gee, I can do this. Not only can I solve the problem, but I can present, and I can share what I've learned with adults.
Mm-hmm. I was actually at one of the school board meetings where one of her student groups was there, actually sharing their experience of presenting their projects at the Carter House Museum and in a public forum, and their experience that they pulled from that. And that was one thing that they definitely expressed, too, was those real world tangible skills that they're going to need beyond high school for sure. Mm-hmm. So
another example, I think, of students are taking charge of their own learning or expressing their learning was when Mike from Dubuque Senior talked about teaching his students to ask good questions. And one of, I think, his overall goals is to produce informed, active citizens when his students leave his classroom. And he said one of the ways that they have to do that, or he thinks, is that students need to learn how to ask good questions so that they can delve into a topic and really make good decisions. And students ask very simple questions at the beginning of the year, but by the end of the year, they're asking way more complex questions. And I think that even shows their learning, because they've learned to really think about the topic and come up with those in-depth questions.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that he does is use a writing strategy called RAFT.
Okay.
And he had students critique each other's writings there too, and so then students learn from each other. They say, oh, this is what so-and-so thinks, or this is how he or she has written, and then I get some ideas too.
So I know it's difficult to remember acronyms because there are so many in education, but what's the general, do you know what the general premise of RAFS is and like guidance of it?
I've kind of forgotten, but students take roles and then they write according to that role.
Oh, okay.
Based on that topic. And if you look up RAFT on the internet, RAFT, you'll come up with all kinds of examples.
With the particular writing strategy.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. So it sounds like something that probably was more geared towards an English language arts classroom, but has obviously lended itself into a social studies classroom.
Because you take roles, so it could be any. Yep.
And that'd be easy to do in a social studies classroom for sure.
Science too.
Yeah.
For example, yeah.
And I think Mike is a good transition into our next category, and that is the idea of questioning. And so after the break, when we come back, we're going to get into the topic of questioning and also our final topic of making connections.
Come light up your learning at Keystone's premier education conference on June 20th and 21st in Dubuque, Iowa. Keynote speakers include nationally known Pete Hall, Joe Beckman, and back by popular demand, Trevor Regan. There will be something for everyone. Be sure to take advantage of the $99 early bird registration. For more information, check out our website at www.aea1.k12.ia.us. Or follow us on Twitter and Facebook. We hope you will join us to light up your learning.
Welcome back to the Next Level Learning Podcast. Once again, I'm Jared Borman here with
Norma Teasy.
And today's episode is all centered around the idea of us trying to draw some conclusions from our interviews thus far this school year, right? And so far, we've kind of covered two major themes, and that was the idea of taking risks. And we've also, just before the break, finished up our theme of students expressing their learning or taking ownership of their learning. And right before the break, Norma brought up Mike Wolfcool, Dubuque senior teacher of social studies, who was getting to the idea of questioning. That's our next major theme, is questioning. And where do the questions come from, I think, is a big, big one that we need to answer. Is it the teachers? Is it the students? But more importantly, are we getting to the idea of how to get good questions out there? There are such things as superficial questions, and there are some that are more deeper than that. So there's even different levels to our questioning, and I think the one educator that I think of right away with the idea of questioning was Ann Gritzner, back to her at Central, the high school science teacher, who does a lot with project-based learning. But there was one particular thing that I really took away from that particular interview, where the essential question is what started it all. How do we reduce our lunch waste? That started the big project-based learning initiative. However, in the following year, you had students where, okay, this thing is going great, but you had some students who were basically acknowledging, this is a great idea, but what if, and then it was like a dot, 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 and then that question sparked a way to make it even better. No one was really saying that was a bad idea. They were simply saying that was fantastic, it worked. But is there a way to make it even better? And so that continual evolution of an idea, of a project of any kind, I think is good questioning and trying to get them to that level. Because, and what I really like about Gritzner, and also, it's almost like, it's weird. You have to understand as an educator where you need to help break down barriers, but then you also need to figure out when to build barriers for students. And she was really good about the idea of when students felt that they just, we met a roadblock, we're done, we're finished. She says, no, let's, what are some questions we need to think about in order to get over this hurdle? But then as soon as students also feel like, oh, we're done, this is great, we got it working, she'd be like, yeah, but, and then she'd throw another thing in there. So it kind of works both ways in a way.
Yeah, they're still working on that glass bottle issue, I think. Aren't they trying to get
to
find out if the glass is going to be a good solution? So
the recycling of the glass products. Yeah. Was there one in particular you had for questioning other than Mike?
Yeah, you know, we talked about problem solving, and when you're solving a problem, you're always asking yourself questions. And we haven't talked about Stephanie Stocks from West Delaware, who used the breakout kits early on this year, and she had problems that students were to solve. But what happens with that, if the lock combinations don't work, then the students have to go back, and this kind of echoes what Anne does too. They have to go back and not just try the lock again, but really analyze the problem and think, okay, or ask themselves, what did we do wrong, or is there a clue we're not seeing, and then try to solve that problem. So they've got to continually ask questions too in breakout, but also just in any kind of a problem-solving situation.
And I think that's a key piece when trying to figure out, you know, when you design something, well, you can call it a game if you want, or designing some kind of learning activity. To me, the difference between a really good learning activity like Breakout EDU and a learning activity that's more like an app on an iPad or something like that is, are students able to just click their way to the answer? If this didn't work, click this answer. Nope, click this answer. And there's really no idea or question of why. I think that was one big takeaway from my grad studies, was how a lot of, it seems like a lot of technology doesn't build in that metacognitive process of where a student has to ask, why didn't this work? And asking that question allows them to gets them to a deeper level of learning, like Breakout EDU. They got to go back and ask the why in order to solve that problem versus, nope, we'll just try this. That didn't work. Nope, just try this, and just keep trying until eventually something, because you know there's a right answer somewhere. But that goes beyond that, I think.
And I think Mike mentioned, too, that when students start asking their own questions, then they're more invested in the whole project and the whole learning, and then the learning just multiplies.
So you have two levels of questioning here. You have the teacher questions, you have the student questions. How would you, I guess, I'm just going to be just a question, impromptu question here for Norma, but like, how would you differentiate the two? Are both equally important? Or, I mean, what makes a teacher question versus a student question? Or could they just all be lumped into learner questions versus teacher and student? Should we look at it as learner questions?
Well, I think the learner question all lumped together probably is pretty powerful, but you might have to start out as a teacher prompting or doing some modeling of questioning. Or, you know, students, like Mike had indicated earlier, students will start out asking very simple questions. And somehow as a teacher, you've got to kind of turn that around and start pondering and thinking, maybe out loud, do a, you know, a think, share kind of thing out loud as part of the modeling to come up with those deeper questions.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think it's really powerful if the students come up with the questions in the end.
Yeah,
that's
eventually
the end result.
Mm-hmm.
Because like Mike had said, we want people to be informed citizens, active informed citizens. And mm-hmm. I think if they learn how to think for themselves and ask those questions, they'll get at that.
I just got done talking with a group this morning of elementary teachers. That was one thing that they want to make as a goal for next year, is how do we strengthen our questioning skills and get students to strengthen their questioning skills at an elementary level? Because it can happen. Maybe that's a idea for a future episode or something, just to center around the idea of how do we build and scaffold good questioning. Because I'm sure there are strategies that could be integrated for me myself personally as an educator, but also for my students. For me in my own classroom, it was a lot of in that in-class discussion time. Every day, if we had in-class discussion that was sort of set up ahead of time, I would always assign to a student, one or two students, okay, you're going to be the questioners for the day. You're going to be the one that sort of leads the good question to prompt the large group discussion. And that freaked kids out. But what I always did with them is I said, before you go into tomorrow's large group discussion, we're going to go back and forth. You're going to shoot me your question. I am going to then give you some feedback on the question. And honestly, what I did is I didn't really say, here's what I would tweak with that. I would just simply say, I would ask a question back. And that would usually lead to a deeper question. And then when I felt like it still wasn't there, I could ask another question, which sounds so unproductive of just answering questions with more questions, because that aggravates students. But it gets them to where they need to be. And I think that them feeling like I can go into tomorrow's discussion as the lead questioner and sure, I got something good, that builds confidence with their questioning skills.
Sure, because they've had practice for one. Well, for one, you've modeled,
mm-hmm.
but they've had practice with a really tough person,
mm-hmm.
to get that feedback back. So they figure, well, if I can handle my teacher, you know, I'll be okay with the class. You know, yeah, it does build confidence.
And the one fun thing that I like to do, too, sometimes was you know, when I knew the students had, they had their questions set up, I would try to prompt with one of my questions that was more superficial. And then at the end of the large group discussion, I would say, why was their question better than mine? And we would talk about what makes good questions.
Oh, yeah.
And so I would purposefully put junk mm-hmm. questions out there just so they could compare and contrast
sure.
and analyze a little bit more as to what makes a good question for this particular topic of our discussion.
Mm-hmm.
That was always fun.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But the idea of questioning also, you know, Kelly Olson, she was another educator who used questioning quite a bit. And she mentioned, too, that and what she really liked about the FOSS kits in particular, which, again, I liked bringing Jason into that episode specifically with that one, and the idea of being able to use those questions to prompt more thinking. The FOSS kits really led themselves very well to the idea of being able to use questions, because I think the way Jason described it, and I'm probably going to butcher this completely, but the way he was describing the new science standards was that those... what do you say? Oh, the idea of the idea of using a phenomenon of some kind in order to prompt that thinking and utilize that questioning a little bit more. Probably need to go back to that episode and listen to that mm-hmm. one again, but because I most likely got it wrong,
mm-hmm.
but I'm pretty sure that's what Jason was talking about as far as using those for questioning.
Yeah, he talked a lot about the FOSS kits and how they address, I'm looking at my notes here, 8 investigations with one of the kits and addressing 6 to 8 learning standards.
Mm.
So a lot of space there for addressing. I think he was talking about starting out with a really high-level question, too. And that's
uh-huh.
what I was thinking of when you said that. And then if you have to get down to the lower, some of the lower standards, lower basic facts, you can do that to get back to that
if you need
one.
To.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I think that brings up another idea, because you mentioned, you brought up the word standards again, is I think that is a myth, maybe a misconception, that I can't do this upper level thinking or these upper level activities because I got all these standards to cover. But in reality, if you focus on the deep questions, that will usually lead to learning that will naturally embed all those mm-hmm. other substandards in a way that feels more natural to the learning process, other than just isolating each standard by itself in a way. So I think if there's anything that we debunked this year through these discussions, that would probably be one, because that was brought up a number of times, and I don't know if that counts as another theme or not, but I think that's important to note.
Right. Well, I think all the teachers are concerned about meeting those standards and addressing those standards. And one of the things, I think it came out of Jason's discussion, was that teachers have to go through the same thinking process that students do. That teachers have to do it first, to go through and design these activities, link them with the standards, and figure out, you know, what am I doing? All that's a higher thinking right there
mm-hmm.
before it even gets to the classroom.
And Ann Johnson was another educator, the fifth one here that I'll mention too, with the idea of questioning. And when students are, you know, in that process of expressing their thinking, but also asking questions, when a student comes to her with a question, as we mentioned before, when they come to her with a question, she's answering back with questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciated having Sarah Seek in that particular episode with us, because she was able to break down a lot of that understanding
yeah.
for me in a way.
Yeah.
Because this was an aha moment for me, as well, one, as an educator, but two, as a father with small children, was the idea of almost like experiential learning, where we're putting kids in a situation where they have to utilize math without having to just focus on numbers, but they're using the process, the logical, mathematical process to solve the problem in a way, which, again, kind of goes back to the idea of problem solving.
And one of the words I wrote down in my notes when we talked with Ann was perseverance.
Yeah.
That going through that whole process and questioning and getting the right tool and going back, that's all sticking with it, perseverance, and getting through to the end. And actually, we saw that in Ann's discussion, a lot of these educators.
Yeah, that the idea of taking risks, problem solving, asking questions, all these major themes are coming about in a way where it seems like this just almost feels like a, I don't want to say it's linear, I don't want to say it's cyclical, because it never feels like those two. It feels very messy and divergent and everything else, but I would say all those elements are deeply embedded in the learning process, right? Mm-hmm. And no matter what content area, no matter what grade level, that's been proven mm-hmm. throughout the five episodes that we've had so far.
One of the terms that I also wrote down with Ann's interview.
Which
Ann? Ann at Sageville. Sorry, we had two Anns. Ann Johnson at Sageville with the second graders. Was that she always said, and this alludes to what you said, Jared, tell me more. So she always came back, and when the students, you know, explained what they couldn't get or whatever, she said, well, tell me more. So they had to verbalize, and I think at the same time, think through a little deeper, well, you know, explain the problem and
yes,
to someone else. And then pretty soon they can probably solve it themselves.
It seems like they're great learning and teaching opportunities that present themselves mm-hmm. with just few word phrases, you know, with growth mindset, including the word yet. Tell me more. Even the phrase of I don't know, whether the teacher or the student says that, lends itself to another opportunity of learning. Just these tiny little phrases that seem to naturally embed themselves in discussion and conversation as learners. Our last theme that we have here is making connections. And I personally wanted to save this one as the last one, because I really felt like that you and I are going through this process right now, Norma, mm-hmm. where we are trying to make connections specifically in between all these different educators so far that we've had the privilege of interviewing, but more importantly, making the connections from our previous experience with education to even outside experiences of education. That making connections, I honestly cannot express enough how much that presented itself in my own classroom. And it seems like once I started to focus on that, for me, that was like the big bang moment. Like all kinds of cool stuff started to happen. But making connections is embedded in every single one of these. Like, for example, even Stephanie Stocks with the breakout EDU kits, making connections between those particular questions in order to, because most breakout EDU boxes, if designed right, have some kind of theme to them of some nature, which inside that theme, you see these small connections happening in order to solve that clue and open the box. Is there one that jumps out to mind as far as making connections for you that were just like really good example?
Well, Ann Gritzner, I think that whole project, everything she does, the students are making connections in
talk about the books. The books thing, I think, was cool.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I really like that. Being a librarian, that just really hit a spot. Well, she has, remind me if I get this wrong, she has students reading fiction and nonfiction, I think, or mostly fiction.
Mostly the ones fiction.
That somehow relate to science. And then they had these big discussions. And it really, the one, now I'm drawing a blank, it's The Life of Henrietta Slacks. I think that's her name. Lacks. Okay. Life of Henrietta Lacks, I think it is. But that brought a lot of discussion about cells and using people's cells for scientific research. I think there was one on the Holocaust, was there?
Yes, about a Holocaust survivor.
Yeah, and students...
And how that person really should have been dead.
Yeah.
But ended up surviving.
Yeah. And then they talked about... Some of the students went home and talked about that book with their parents, and the parents wanted the book too. But, you know, the whole thing was, well, could I have survived?
Mm-hmm.
And that the kids really got involved in those topics because they were discussion and they could relate to their own life and what they know.
Well, the one and with those books in particular, because as I was interviewing her and she was talking about these books, I thought, this is fantastic that a science teacher is taking a reading initiative. But in the back of my mind, the whole time she was talking, I thought, what does this have to do with science? And so when I asked her that big question, she did talk about how it was connected to the anatomy class and how they are talking about the physiological things that are happening and all that and how the body reacts in that kind of circumstance. Yeah. Because so many times we study the body, we study the systems of the body and everything else like that, but that's just a complete isolation.
Right.
Versus if you look at it through another lens of, let's talk about anatomy through the Holocaust.
Yeah.
You know, that's a whole different perspective.
Oh, yeah. I, you know, reading a book before you start the actual, whatever the content is, provides a background information. Even though maybe it's not totally accurate, it's pretty close, or a lot of times they are. And that brings that background information. It brings knowledge or vocabulary that you might not have known before. But, it's a very powerful piece. And part of hers, too, I wanted to make a note is that students were in groups and they got to choose the book. So yes. It wasn't the whole class. So there was choice there, too, which was really
It was a genuine literature circle. Right. Yeah. I mean, that's the model that she was using. Yeah. And it seemed to work very well. And the cool part, too, that we also heard from her was that she was she got the idea from the English teacher. And so her those two work closely together in bouncing those ideas back and forth from one another.
Yeah, I think she said, well, you know, I heard that it's not just the reading teachers who teach reading, but it's the content areas. And she had to think about that for a while, and that's why she went to the reading teacher and she said, okay, I'm going to give this a try. And I think it's been really successful.
Oh, it's been immensely successful. And anytime you have teachers, you know, we do a lot of, let's say, PLCs or group work where we're bunched together based on content area. But in smaller school districts, sometimes you're the only content person. But being able to work with someone outside your content area and sort of figure out, okay, this is what I'm teaching, what are you teaching, and where can we find connections? Because that conversation, as educators, when we try to make the connections between content areas, automatically gets us to a level where we are searching for concepts. Mm-hmm. And concepts go beyond skills. Skills are simply what's within our content area. Concepts bleed into other content areas, and that gets students what I feel is like to the ultimate higher levels of thinking, because now you're taking that concept and you're applying it to multiple facets of your own life
and making connections.
And making connections,
connections all over. Yep, that's right.
Everywhere.
Yep.
I mean, and when they can carry that over into their everyday life and start to see the same connections.
Yep. And, you know, we're talking about a science teacher doing this, but, you know, all subject areas can do it. Social studies in particular, there's wonderful historical fiction available that can build that background knowledge on a particular time period or whatever it is that you're studying in social studies. And I'll have to put a plug in here, but your school librarians are great resources to go to if you're looking for some kind of suggestions for those kinds of reading materials.
Absolutely. And I'll just say anybody, right? School librarians specifically if you want to get the books, but just like what Ann did, just like what a lot of these educators did, they go to other educators.
PLCs, go wherever your professional learning network is.
And I think that was kind of fun. And I don't think it was really planned, to be honest with you, when we started this podcast, to kind of ask that question at the end of what advice would you give a person starting off in education as a teacher, you know? Like, it was kind of, I don't know, I started to do it in my interviews, but it was kind of like, I just wanted to pick their brain, because if they truly are someone who we consider has an expertise as an educator, I mean, you got Mike who's been teaching for 37 years, you've got Ann who's been teaching for 20-some years, I think 24, 25 or something like that. You have a lot of good experience in just the five people that we have interviewed this year. I think it'd be kind of fun because we hear so many good educators start off as a teacher and then get burnt out quickly, or, you know, other unforeseen circumstances pop up, and it just seems like they leave the profession, and we need those kind of educators. Mm-hmm. So what's the big thing that I asked was, what's the one piece of advice you'd give them? And almost all of them were talking about building your professional learning network or your personal learning network. You need to surround yourself with other learners, essentially. Mm-hmm. And I remember my parents telling me this growing up. If you surround yourself with good people, you're going to do good things. You surround yourself with bad people, you're going to do bad things. And it really did boil down to that. And I think as educators, we have to keep in mind, surround yourself with learners and you will continue to learn. Otherwise, you'll be very isolated, I think, as an educator. And that could be lonesome, frustrating,
plus
you name it.
Plus, it's fun and you get new ideas and a lot of support. And it's great to connect with other teachers in whatever format you do that.
I think getting a new idea from another educator is one of the most invigorating things for me, because I get excited to want to try it. And then, again, taking risks, I take the risk to try it. May not have worked exactly like it for me as it did for the previous teacher, but at least I tried it. But as soon as I get it working for the students and the students are seeing the benefit of it, that just lights you up.
Right, and then you can maybe even make it better. And that actually leads to our KPEC conference.
You made the connection.
I was wondering if you were going to do it or if I was going to get to say so first. And I'll let you talk about that. But if you're looking for ideas, KPEC is a place to go.
Absolutely.
From other teachers.
Absolutely. And so I think this would be a good opportunity to take that break because we're going to bring Tisha Ruley into this, who is the instructional services supervisor. And so she's going to talk more about KPEC. But this year's theme is Light Up Your Learning. And I don't think there's a better transition other than that. So stick around and listen in on the KPEC conversation.
Did you know Keystone AEA partners with 23 public and 27 non-public school districts? This means 33,000 students and 4,500 teachers, administrators, counselors, teacher librarians, and paraeducators are supported. Did you know Keystone AEA's media library offers more than 140,000 educational materials for teachers, students, and parents in a variety of formats? This includes books, DVDs, magazines, and hands-on kits. Keystone provides twice-a-week van delivery, taking about 11,500 items a week to area school districts. Materials can even be ordered online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. For more information, visit our Keystone AEA website at www.aea1.k12.ia.us for more information about our programs and services.
Welcome back to the Next Level Learning Podcast. And just before the break, we had this beautiful transition to Light Up Your Learning, which just happens to be this year's theme of our KPEC conference. And for those that haven't heard of KPEC or aren't familiar with it, KPEC stands for Keystone Premier Education Conference. And so we actually have in here Tisha Ruley, who is going to be introducing herself, number one, but also talking about the conference itself this year, because we have a lot of cool stuff happening, some new stuff even. As well as maybe talk about the idea of the lantern, not the lanterns, whatever you want to call them, you know, like the lights sort of go along with the theme and what that means.
Luminaries.
Thank you. And how does that go along with the theme? So go ahead and introduce yourself to everyone.
Okay. Hi, everyone. My name is Tisha Ruley. I'm the Director of Educational Services here at Keystone AEA, and I am so excited to be here. You may recognize my voice. I've been the one that has been hopping on here and there for those commercials that have been brought to you during those breaks. But yes, we're so excited about KPEC this year. We have several strands that we're bringing to you again, hopefully that will be offering something for everyone. And so just kind of looking across the strands here, we have something in the area of leadership and things that will be involved within that is anything from, you know, appealing to teacher leadership to managing conflict to helping team building, all the way to navigating some of those difficult conversations. Our another strand we have is technology and kind of digging into some of that blended and flipped learning, talking about digital citizenship, bringing to you some information around technology integration, and then finally around digital portfolios as well. Something new we're offering this year is special education. And so some things that you might find at the conference would be anything around classroom management to assistive technology, to addressing challenging behaviors. Coming again, we have Whole Child. And again, kind of that hot topic of growth mindset will certainly be appealed to. And we'll have Trevor Regan brought back by popular demand again this year. And he's that great guy that's well known for his information around growth mindset and how to put that into practice. And then some more information around meditation, relaxation, mindfulness, ADHD, anxiety, the list goes on. And last but not certainly least, we have the content area. So anything from science to social studies to math interventions to dyslexia to STEM, and the list goes on. So hope to see you there. It's going to be an amazing conference with 88 breakout sessions and then our keynoters with Pete Hall and Joe Beckman coming to us on that second day.
So literally, it's like, if you, for those that are going to the conference, it is going to be extremely difficult to find something there that's like not for you, right?
I would think so. I think that people are going to be wanting to go to a session, and then at the same time, there'll be another session just because it's something truly for everyone. And we do have some repeat sessions, but that's the goal, to leave people wishing that they could be in several sessions.
Yeah. And for those that can't decide between sessions, we have resources posted online, so they'll be able to check them out if they can't make it to a session. Or if you have a good learning friend that is willing to actually go to another session, and you guys can share notes. I know that strategy is used quite a bit, but that's the benefit of having a learning community that's physically there with you versus just, you know, on Twitter or something like that. Having that face-to-face connection is also very important.
Absolutely. But, and I know that we'll be Facebook Live-ing some things. So we have Joe Beckman will be coming to you via Facebook Live, and I know Twitter will be going crazy. And we also have some podcasts following up with Joe Beckman and Pete Hall, and I think even Trevor Regan, kind of a Q&A and a podcast follow-up for people to have some questions answered and some things that maybe didn't get hit in the keynote presentation that they can have some follow-up on.
And that's with your friend Greg. And their podcast, the Instructional Coaching Corner, right?
They are, yep, out of Western Dubuque, Greg Detmeyer.
So we're going to, I'm excited to listen to those podcasts and those interviews that he's going to be setting up. Mm-hmm. Norma and I will also be there doing a podcast session, sort of live, kind of, there's so many good instructional ideas there. So it's a matter of pulling aside, I should say, those educators and say, hey, what are you learning that could get students in upper levels of thinking? What are you hearing? What are you seeing? Other than just tools or things, what are the strategies you're hearing about and all of that. So we have that podcast pavilion, which is a new feature this year, which I'm kind of excited about. Also Bloggers Cafe, which is always a fun little spot to go to. So if you are an educator that, let's say, okay, this particular hour there really isn't a session there that really speaks to me, you can always go to the Bloggers Cafe. If you want to do some reflection and do your blogging there, there'll be some coffee there. You can also chat, check social media, share out what you're learning. There's a little space for you to kind of reflect, because as we've noted, as a major theme for good educators is that ability to be able to reflect and have that time to reflect. So we want to provide a space for that if you need be.
And that whole goal of the conference being kind of lighting up your learning, feeling inspired, grabbing those ideas and be able to take it and apply it. And so what a great opportunity to be able to look out over the river in that beautiful room.
Can't beat it.
And reflect on those ideas and to be able to have a game plan when you go back and maybe over the summer for those of you that are ready to dig in right away or to be ready to kick off right away in August.
And we'll also have a bunch of AEA resources too, right?
We absolutely will be. Yep. So this is another addition this year. We're super excited. We'll have a table for each of the five strands that we have kind of put our heads together here at Keystone and pulled some materials that will be representative of each of those strand areas. Obviously, within the content areas, we'll have a lot of different materials that will be set out on the table. So you can walk along, peruse them, take note of maybe the kit number or the book number so that you can order it yourself if you would like and hopefully be inspired by those materials or at least know what materials are out there.
Yeah, and that's always a fun feature because a lot of teachers, we've heard that from past evaluations, is we wish we could see things and check things out and all of that. And so that's sort of what we were looking for too. And then on top of, you would think that's enough new things for 1 year, for sure. But
wait, it's us.
There's still another one, poster sessions.
Exactly. Okay. So we have poster sessions. The whole idea is that you can walk by at the end of that first day, I believe around 3:30. Leading up to about 4:15 before our awesome social hour. Hopefully that we can bask out in the sun in that beautiful weather. You can walk by the poster sessions and hopefully glean some ideas that you can take right away and implement right back into your classroom or right into your school.
Now, the reason why I like these poster sessions is because I've been to other conferences where they have those as an option. And it seems like you get a lot of those sessions that are like an hour long or whatever they might be where you have a teacher or a group of teachers that are simply sharing something that really cool happened in their classroom, a good idea, something they tried and it just worked. Those sessions are really good as far as gaining more ideas, sparking new ideas and so forth. They don't tend to be very interactive is the thing. And so being able to pull those kind of sessions aside, and we've also all hear from educators too, like, I don't want to stand up in front of people and present, but something that may be a little less intimidating is simply here's a booth or a table, set it up the way you want it, that shares that great story, and then anybody that's wanting to stop by can stop by and you can share your story with them. So I find it to be less intimidating. I find it to be more intimate, more one-on-one. Absolutely. Or with a small group. And it still is a great way to get good ideas and just sort of spark new ideas for myself.
Absolutely. I know a couple of our own people here at Keystone are going to be providing some of those poster sessions. And I had a great conversation the other day with a gal, and she was sharing some of the things that she's handing out as resources, as far as visuals and helping with behaviors in the classroom. And I said, exactly, that's what we're looking for. Yeah. Some of those things that you can take right away. They don't have to be anything earth-shattering, but you can take them and apply them and maybe also spark an idea with someone else that they can take and run with and make it their own.
Absolutely. And I think those are, if anything, those are just kind of good marketing moments too for your school district. If it was a school-wide thing or even a classroom thing, you sharing your story on behalf of your school is a great way to showcase your school, if anything, if in its smallest form.
A great way to celebrate too. Some absolutely. Great things going on.
That's the fun part. And when you can share your story and other people value your story, that ignites the fire inside yourself. That ignites the intrinsic motivation. And that is also why this year's theme is so relevant for so many educators of light up your learning. And talk about this luminary idea.
Yeah, so you got me thinking about that again with igniting your learning and what lights that up. So one of our activities that we're going to kick off with on that very first day, the energy is just going to be incredible in that room. But to kind of be thinking about and going to lay the foundation of why are we here? Why are we here at KPEC? And on our luminaries, we'll each have a bag for each person. And the whole idea is that we can write on that bag kind of, why are you there? Is it a specific student that you have in mind or a specific group of students? Or what is it that has brought you to KPEC? What's your reason for being there? What's your purpose behind your learning over the next couple of days?
I think that's fun to see all those kind of set up. And
absolutely.
An accumulative why of why you have 700 and some educators, which I would call summer school. I mean, so many people, there are so many myths about teachers and, oh, you have summers off.
Or not.
Or not, exactly. And it's like, that's not the case. If that was the case, then we would not have the amount of educators we have for this conference who have a genuine interest to continue to learn.
Exactly.
And that's why they're educators.
Yep. Taking time out, 2 days plus probably for travel out of their summer to come and learn. And I think about how many people we're going to have in that room, 740-ish, sitting in that room and how dedicated our teachers are. And so coming back to our collective reasoning, creating these luminaries, putting them out there, and they may move a little bit over the next couple days that we're there, but really great way for us to kind of lay the groundwork for why we're learning and to take off and hopefully inspire one another as we go.
And I think that's important to establish right away because that's kind of the difference between shopping and buying. Shopping, you're just kind of going and maybe you walk away with something. You don't know. Buying is, I'm here. Yep. I'm here for a reason. Yep. And here's my reason. And I'm going to take something away from this that I know I'm going to be able to use that I'm probably not going to wait until day one of the next school year to start to implement.
Exactly.
I'm probably going to use the rest of my summer to figure out and work it in and start planning.
And so that goes along with the breakouts that we have all these sessions and they're aligned to the strands and you get to be the chooser in your path. And so if something's not fitting for you as you're sitting down and it's not aligning with your purpose, then go ahead and get up and move to a session that does fit what you need.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the power of KPEC, I think.
That's awesome. So for those that are attending KPEC, be excited because this is not your same old conference that you may have attended in the past when it comes to KPEC or even when it was
not.
TIC.
Yep.
This is something that is continually being revamped. You've already heard the new additions this year from the poster sessions to the Bloggers Cafe to the Podcast Pavilion to the luminaries that we're going to have established. This is going to have so much energy around it that I think people that are going to be there are going to really find it valuable and hopefully just keep coming back and keep learning because that's always the goal. Just like we talked about, I know you weren't here, but right before the break, before this segment, we were talking about when you surround yourself with learners, you will continue learning. And absolutely, that's what we're hoping to do here, is just surround yourself with a lot of learners.
And that will certainly happen, because we're going to have jam-packed, fantastic couple days.
Absolutely. So thanks again for listening to this episode of the Next Level Learning Podcast. It's been an absolute joy. We will see you later in the month of June at the KPEC conference, where Norma and I will be doing our episode live from there. And hopefully you can join us there. Otherwise, we will be back at the start of next school year, and hopefully with a whole new lineup of educators who are moving students from lower levels to upper levels of thinking. And hopefully we can share their expertise with you, so hopefully it can spark new ideas for yourself. So thanks for listening. The Keystone AEA proudly supports the Next Level Learning Podcast.